every meeting I've had now for many, many years has been a very pleasant experience for me. I think sometime about some of the stories I heard about my grandfather and some of the hardships he had to endure. And even my father had some experiences of that kind. And in my earlier preaching years, there were a few times when there were some inconveniences. But in recent years, preachers have had it wonderfully easy. And you've made it easy for us this week. We've had a very pleasant place to stay. We've had wonderful food to eat and good company and pleasant services. And meeting with all of you, enjoying your good attention, singing with you, praying with you. It's just been a very pleasant week for my wife and me. Particularly glad she could come along and be here with us as well. I want to express my appreciation to each one of you who has done something to make this meeting successful. Your presence here means a great deal. And as I've said, the good attention and your participation in the singing. I've appreciated Brother Joe and the preparation that was made for the meeting here and the good support he's given this week. I was with him, as he mentioned, I think, earlier, in a meeting over in Columbus, Mississippi, a number of years ago. I hadn't seen him, I don't guess, since that. But it was good to see him and Connie again and to have the opportunity to be in fellowship and work with them as well as with all of you. Many of you get to Atlanta from time to time, and I hope that if you do and need a place to worship, we'd be glad to have you. We're up on the northeast side, right close to what they call Spaghetti Junction, where 85 and 285 cross. Church building very close there, and we live close, and you'd certainly be welcome to be with us at the Embry Hills Church. We appreciate the presence of visitors. We've had visitors most every night, and tonight's no exception. It's great to have Gary Patton and his wife and their son Craig, who's one of our members at Embry Hills. We love him and appreciate him there so very much. A lot more things could be said, but I guess that's about all that should be said. And so we'll go ahead with the lesson of the evening. We have announced as a theme for this, actually it was suggested 3 or 4 years ago when this meeting was planned, there is work that we all can do. And we began the Bible class by talking about work that we all can do, based on Acts 2:42, when new converts in Jerusalem all continued steadfastly in the apostles' teaching, fellowship, breaking of bread, and prayer. And that's something that all of us can do and, of course, should do. We talked about the fact that all cannot do the same thing in our Sunday morning lesson, as we talked about the body having gifts differing. But it's important that whatever it is we can do, even if it's a matter of giving a cup of cold water, we need to do it to the very best of our ability. We talked about work that good women can do and parents can do and the work that aged can do and young people can do and work that elders do. And tonight we're going to talk about some work that all of us must do. And I'm afraid it's something that we have not emphasized as much as we should have. Some congregations do, but most do not. And it's urgent that we recognize that each person has that responsibility. I said in the beginning of this lesson, of this series of meetings, that if I leave this place and no one is doing any more than he was doing when I came, then our efforts have been really in vain. There should be some activities in progress after this meeting is over that were not being practiced when it began. And I'm asking each one of you, what is it that you will do in this next week or 2 weeks or months or years that God gives you that you have not been doing? The sky is the limit in what can be done. But I want us to study together what is sometimes called the parable of the talents. And I'm going to read it to you. You're probably familiar with it, but listen very closely to the details of this interesting parable, which obviously involves Jesus' departure and leaving with his disciples some responsibilities. The kingdom of heaven, I'm beginning with verse 14 of Matthew 25, is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them, made another 5 talents. And likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Take therefore the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Let's begin our study with some observations that might not be evident at the beginning. A talent is not an ability. It's come to mean that in our language. In fact, the word talent actually was invented out of this very parable. It entered the English language out of this parable. But the meaning is different. It's not speaking about ability, but rather a piece of money. He delivered to each his talent according to his ability, a large piece of money. The talents were distributed according to ability, and a talent in ancient times was about $20,000 of early 21st century money. And so the man who had 5 talents was given $100,000. What was this to be done? Well, each talent that was given represented first an opportunity. If a man had $100,000 to invest and use, then he certainly would have more opportunity than a man who only had $40,000 to invest or $10,000 to invest. But every opportunity involved a responsibility. The more a man had, the more he was responsible for, the more that was expected of him, of course. The more talent, the more opportunity. And the servants were to do with the master's money what he would have done if he remained in the country. What would he have done with the money? Well, we have some indication here. He would have traded with it, or he would have given it to the bankers. Whatever would increase the money most was what he would have done with it in his wisdom and in his ability to use what he had. Well, is there something that has been delivered to disciples? Who is this master that's going away? Jesus. What are these talents? What is this money? What is this treasure that Jesus delivered to them? Well, I think we have the answer to that question when we look at Mark 16, verse 15. He's told them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. What Jesus had produced by the death, the burial, and resurrection was the gospel of Jesus Christ, the truth, the event that changes the history of the world. Paul spoke about it as a treasure that we have in earthen vessels. And when Jesus is ready to go into heaven, he delivers it to them. We have in Matthew the 28th chapter in verse 20, these words, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. The things that Jesus had commanded were truth. They were treasure that he had delivered to them. In Luke's account, Luke 24, verse 47, he said that repentance and remission of sins, what a precious treasure remission of sins was and is. And Jesus was delivering it into their hands. Paul considered the gospel a treasure that had been entrusted to him. In 1 Timothy, the first chapter, and verse 11, he speaks about that as the trust that had been given to his account. 1 Timothy, chapter 1, and verse 11, Paul says, according to the glorious gospel of the blessed God, which was committed to my trust, to my trust. If someone's going away and he leaves something precious in your hands and says, you take care of it till I come back, that's a trust. They didn't have banks in those days, especially in the Old Testament times, as we do. And so when a man went into a distant place, he was not willing to take it with him because it might be lost. And if he left it just in his home without any caretaker, it might be lost. But he entrusted it to some friend in whom he had confidence. In the 6th chapter of this 1 Timothy, Paul spoke to Timothy and said, guard what was committed to your trust. And then in the 2nd chapter of 2 Timothy and verse 2, Paul speaks about the responsibility that Timothy had to pass it on to others. The same things that you have received from me among many witnesses, you entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. This precious gospel of Jesus Christ was being handed down to Paul, and then Paul to Timothy, and then Timothy to faithful men who would hand it down to other faithful men down through the ages. I believe that's the talents that Jesus distributed to his disciples. And what were they to do with them? What would Jesus have done if he was here on earth? Now suppose he had stayed here after his resurrection. What do you think he would have been doing? Well, I believe he would have been doing what he had been doing. His mission was to seek and to save the lost. And he said again and again that we have to go on to the other cities to preach the gospel. For this reason, I came forth. And so what does the Lord expect his disciples to do with this gospel that he has entrusted to their care? Well, what he said was, go into all the world and preach it. In the Matthew's account, he said, teach them to do everything I've told you to do. And in Luke's account, this is to be preached into all nations. He placed the responsibility upon his disciples, and it's come down to us through men like Paul and Timothy and faithful men. It's come down to us that Christ has entrusted this precious gospel into our hands. And it is our responsibility to do with this gospel what Jesus would have done if he had remained here upon the earth. Everyone received at least one talent. Every Christian has received the gospel and has some opportunity to spread it. Some have more opportunity to others than others, just exactly as some of these receive more talent, more responsibility, more opportunities than others for increasing the value of their master's treasure. But everyone received some responsibility, some opportunity. Not only that, but everyone was expected to use the talent that he had. The man who had only one, you remember, did not use it. And the Lord was not happy with him at all. You know, many times we feel that we're doing well if we don't do something really, really bad. If we just live a good life and don't hurt anybody, then we are due a lot of credit. I heard a story just yesterday, I guess it was, and it's fresh on my mind. I pass it on. There was a lady who had lived to be 100 years old, and somebody found out about it in the community and gave it to the editor of the paper and said, this lady's lived 100 years. You need to do a story on her. Well, he started looking around, checking around, see what she'd accomplished, what she'd done, and he just couldn't find anything much to write. She'd lived 100 years, but what do you say about her accomplishments, about her influence? And so when he just was about to panic, he said, well, I'll just turn it over to the sports writer and let him do it. So the sports writer checks and checks and checks. He can't find anything either, but he wrote, she lived 100 years, no hits, no runs, and no errors. Is that a good record? No runs, no hits, no errors. And a great many people live their whole life with no runs, no hits, and no errors. That was this man who had just one talent. Now, he didn't waste it. He just didn't use it. In a sense, wasted it, because his master intended him to use it, and he didn't use it. He just wrapped it up and brought it to the master. And the master wasn't happy with his inactivity and his failure. And the master is not going to be happy with us when he comes again, and that's part of the story, isn't it? The master comes back and asks an account, and he's going to say, what did you do with the gospel that I delivered to you? This gospel that was such a blessing to you, what did you do with it? And what are we going to say? Master, here's your gospel. I've kept it in the shelf, and it's nicely covered with a leather binding. Is that what we're going to say? What's he going to say then? Is he going to say what he said to this man? Those who use their talents or opportunities were able to get more. And you know, that's the way it is. The person who accepts one opportunity is very likely going to have another opportunity and another opportunity. He's going to be able to increase his opportunities. But if he never gets started, then he never increases his opportunities. The master returned, commended those who had used their talents. He didn't condemn the man who had only two and had made two more, or the man who had, he didn't praise any more the man who had five and had made ten than he did the man who had two. Each one of them had the same commendation because each one had used the ability that he had. And that's the point. He had given it according to their ability, and each one had done the best he could. And that's all the Lord asks of us. It's mighty easy for us to say, well, I'm not as capable as somebody else of preaching, maybe. Or I'm not as capable as somebody else of personal work. And that's true. Some people are just not as capable as others are. We understand, and the Lord understands that. A good father understands that each child is different, and he doesn't necessarily expect the second child to make as good grades as the first child did. If he does and demands it, then that's part of what we talked about the other night, provoking a child to wrath, comparing children. God doesn't do that. He looks at each one of us personally and says, have you done what you were capable of doing with this treasure that I placed in your hands? He punished the one who failed. Now let's make some applications, as if we hadn't already been making some applications. But I think that there are some things we need to do. And this is getting right down to something I'm urging you to do and me to do as a result of, well, this sermon. I don't hesitate to tell you that's what I'm trying to accomplish. I'm trying to get you and me to do some things that we wouldn't do otherwise if we hadn't been here tonight. Now, what do we do? Well, the first thing we're suggesting is pray for opportunities. Just pray that God will give you opportunities. If you haven't had any and haven't seen it, pray for it. I'm going to tell you a little story that happened down in Florida when I was going for a meeting in Ocala. The preacher was urging them to seek opportunities. And one Sunday he said, this week, pray every day that God will give you an opportunity to share the gospel. Well, it was, some of the members took him pretty seriously. It was a lady particularly. And I found women are more easily touched along this line sometimes than men are. We've talked about what women can do. And many a woman has been a very effective sharer of the gospel in her own way. And this lady took it seriously. So Sunday she prayed for an opportunity and didn't see one. Monday, none. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it came Saturday. And she still hadn't seen an opportunity really to share the gospel. And she said, I know the Lord's going to give me one. Well, she went out for lunch at a cafeteria. And there was an older lady right nearby. And she needed a ride home. And she said, ah, this is my opportunity. So she asked the lady, she said, no, this lady that's sitting right over here, they're right close to my house. She'll take me home. And our sister said, oh, well, there goes my opportunity, I guess. But I'm sure the Lord will give me one. And she started home. And on her way home, as she was driving along, you know those lights. You've seen them. I expect you have. I have. Blue, 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 you know. And she, oh, me, what have I done? So she pulled over, and the policeman said, lady, she said, I don't know what I've done. I didn't run a stop sign, did he? He said, no. She said, I wasn't speeding. What? No. Well, what's wrong? What have I done? He said, the tint on your glass is too dark. The tint on my glass is too dark? I never heard of such a thing. She said, you didn't stop me for that. I know you. Oh, I know why you stopped me. She said, I've been praying all week for someone that I could teach the gospel, and I believe you're the answer to my prayer. He said, oh, no, lady. Oh, no. But he said, I'll have to admit my wife's been interested in Bible study, and I'll give you her number. So our sister took the number, and as he went away, he said, now I'm not going to give you a ticket, but you better get that light, those windows lightened up a little bit. Said, next fellow might not be like me. Well, our sister went home, called the patrolman's wife, set up a Bible study. She was converted. She had a visitor from up north, and she was converted. And then at last the patrolman was converted and actually went and helped preach the gospel down in Barbados, as I understand, for a period of time. Pray for opportunities. Well, do you think God's going to open it? I don't know what God's going to do. I can't tell you that. But I know when we're praying for something, it's much more likely we're going to see it. Many times we just don't see the opportunities. They're there. But we just do not see the opportunities. I think it's very important, and I haven't developed this nearly as well as some others. It's important that we learn to turn conversations to Jesus. Insurance salesmen are good at that, aren't they? No matter what you start talking about, eventually it's going to be insurance. I remember going and sitting down with my insurance man, and there was a little sign on there that said, tell me about your grandchildren. Well, I bet. I said, oh, I've got, you know, four grandchildren. Are they insured? And he had me. He had the subject brought up, and I didn't even anticipate it. This same man was a very religious man, and I looked there one time, and the Bible was open. There was a tract in there that said, what the Bible says about alcohol. I said, what does the Bible say about alcohol? He says, you know what the Bible says about alcohol, but I just put that there to get people talking. And I've known one or two people that would take a tract in their pocket with just an interesting title at the top so that people would actually ask questions. You can turn up in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia rather, Scott Smeltzer was helping to start a new congregation in Philadelphia, and he was in a restaurant and he sneezed, and some lady said, God bless you. And he said, "You believe in God?" "Yes, I believe in God." Are you living for God?" Well, I don't know how the conversation went, but she was baptized eventually. Turning just every opportunity, but you've got to be looking for it. And you've got to be willing to put your name out there for Jesus. There was a time when everybody believed in Jesus. But we've coming to a time when you may be looked at a little strange if you express a faith in Jesus and concern for a person's soul. But we just have to be willing to do that. For when you invest a talent, there's a little bit of a risk, but we have to do it anyway. And we can be faithful servants, whether we're successful servants or not. Men, if you have an opportunity to speak publicly, accept the opportunity. Because if you begin that, opportunities will increase. There will be other opportunities as you develop your ability along that line. And we need men to preach full-time the gospel of Christ. If you have that opportunity, don't overlook it. Not every man needs to do that. And I'm not proposing that anybody be eager looking for a preacher job. That's not the point at all. But if you develop yourself as one who is able to preach, and congregations want you to work with them and give your full time to this great work of preaching, in a sense, they're offering you 5 talents, 5 opportunities, in contrast to what other men can have who are working at secular tasks. And accept it, if you will. Accept an offer to move to some needy place. I remember a church where I was preaching in Birmingham, and there was a couple that came, and they were just distraught because they said, "I mean, we're getting transferred to a place where there's no church." I said, "Wonderful." They said, "What?" I said, "Wonderful. You're strong enough Christians that you can start one." Many a church has been started that way. And there was a brother converted a truck driver down in Texas. And soon after he'd been converted, he was transferred somewhere up into Virginia. And everybody thought that's the end of him. Oh, it wasn't the end of him. It was the beginning of a church up there. And I visited that congregation myself. It hadn't been too many years since that took place. If you have an opportunity to go and work somewhere where the church is in need, take it. But Jesus said, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel." And most of us would say, "I can't do that." And that's right. That may be not the opportunity the Lord expects you to accept. But you know, once we have done what we can in our own country, there are things that need to be done in other countries. There's a hymn that we never sing. It's in most of our books. But it has made a deep impression on me. "Behold how many thousands still are lying bound in the darksome prison house of sin, with none to tell them of the Savior's dying, or of the life He died for them to win." We hear so much on the news about what is happening in Nigeria, what is happening in Saudi Arabia, what's happening in Syria, what's happening in Vietnam and other countries. Are we concerned about the gospel being there? Someone asked Brother Leslie Disselkamp, when there was an earthquake, I believe in Mexico, he said, "Are there any Christians there?" Brother Disselkamp said, "I hope so. I hope there are Christians everywhere." But we can become especially concerned when there's some kind of a disaster. Just as surely as there's an earthquake in Mexico, or something erupts in Pakistan or somewhere, a volcano erupts, or there's some other kind of major disaster, maybe famine in Ethiopia or Zimbabwe, and all brethren want to help. And that's fine. That's good. I wouldn't limit that compassion. But can we be as concerned because people are lost in those countries? Because people don't know the Lord in those countries? I'm afraid we're just a little bit askew in our thinking when we're more concerned about people's physical needs than we are their spiritual needs. More concerned about their bodies than we are about their souls. Many nations still need the gospel. And the question is, what additional opportunity do we have to do something for them? Some can go. Brother Joe's been, and others have traveled, of course, into those places, and lived in those places. The saints in Philippi were shining as lights in the world in their own community. They couldn't go to Thessalonica to preach. They couldn't take up roots and move to Thessalonica. But Paul was there preaching. What could they do to share in that great work that he was doing? Well, Paul wrote to them in Philippians 4:15-16. You Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia from you, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving but you only. For even in Thessalonica, you sent once and again for my needs, for my necessities. This was a new church, and there were still lost people without doubt in Philippi, but they were concerned about those in Thessalonica. Paul was there. They couldn't go, but they could support Paul. And Paul wrote to them saying, not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account. This congregation and individuals here can have credit, if you want to talk about credit, for people that are converted in Vietnam, for people that are converted in Nigeria, or people that are converted in Brazil, when we support the men who go there to preach the gospel. And may the Lord help us to have fruit not only in our own community, but in other communities as well. This song I've mentioned has another stanza that says, give of thy sons to bear the message glorious. Give of thy wealth to speed them on their way. Pour out thy soul for them in prayer victorious. And all thou spendest, Jesus will repay. I would love to think that some of these young men here might someday go and give themselves to the preaching of the gospel in some foreign country, not for 2 weeks, but for 2 years, maybe 20 years. Long-term commitments are what are really, really needed. Lois and Eunice gave Timothy to the great work that was to be done. And John wrote, we ought to support people like these, that we may be fellow workers with the truth. And pour out thy soul in prayer for them victorious. Paul said, continue constantly in prayer for us, that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ. How many gospel preachers have you prayed for who are preaching the gospel in difficult places, either in this country or in some foreign country? No generation has had more talents, more opportunities than we've had. We talk sometime about how good it was in the first century. They had the Roman roads, they had the Greek language, they had the peace of Rome, and that's good. But the cross was a disgrace. There were only small numbers to do the work. They were provincial disciples who were even known for their speech because they came out of Galilee, and they were poor people. In the 21st century, how does an auto and a jet compare to those Roman roads in ease of transportation? And American English is just as widely spoken as the Greek language was in that time. And an American passport can get you most anywhere. Maybe not to stay as long as one needs to stay, but we can get somewhere with the gospel. And the cross is generally respected. And we are numerous saints in this church and in this country. And there are traveling disciples all going all over the world for business purposes. And we are desperate. We are exceedingly wealthy. If you don't think so, just talk to Brother Joe about those in Vietnam. I'll talk to you about people in Africa who have so little compared to what we have. But they took the gospel to the world in spite of the disadvantages they had. And we should be able to do it also. After a long time, the Lord of these servants came and settled accounts with them. He comes again, O Zion, ere thou meet him. Make known to every heart his saving grace. Let none whom he hath ransomed fail to greet him through thy neglect, unfit to see his face. There's some questions we must answer. Have we done with the gospel that he left us what he intended for us to do? Have we hidden it or spread it? Sometimes we hide it in walls like this and fail to spread it, even in our own community, much less to the world. How have we used the opportunities that have appeared in our path? And have we sought additional opportunities, increasing our talents, as it were? And remember that approval was not based on success, but on faithfulness. There are times when success is more difficult, and I'm convinced that we're living in such times. There's a big difference now in a gospel meeting like this, some of the tent meetings that even I used to hold years ago, but especially my father and grandfather. My grandfather said, I've never been whitewashed in a meeting. What he meant by that, he had never had a meeting when there were not some baptisms. I've had some, I'll tell you now. Part of that is because there are preachers of the gospel who are constantly preaching and baptizing people in congregations. It's not all done in big meetings, but it's more difficult to reach people now than it was in this part of the world. There are places, though, where there's greater opportunity, and I think that we need to increase our opportunities by going into those places where the opportunities are greater, perhaps, than they are here with us. When we sing, I'm Coming, Lord, the primary thought is that those who are not Christians will come to the Lord. But the Lord asked Isaiah, who will go for us? Whom shall we send? And Isaiah said, here am I, send me. There's a sense in which every one of us as Christians, when we hear the Lord's call to go and spread the gospel, can say, I am coming, Lord. But first and foremost, of course, any here who are not Christians need to come to the Lord to be saved. That's the first and foremost action. It's easy to be critical of what others are doing or not doing, but the first thing you need to do is become a Christian, to become a child of God, to be saved from your sins. The gospel is given to us for spreading, but the gospel first is given to us for obedience. Paul said they have not all obeyed the gospel. And when Christ comes again, he not only is going to hold Christians responsible for how they have spread or failed to spread the gospel, but he is also going to reap vengeance on them that know not God and that obey not the gospel. 2 Thessalonians 1:7-9. If you have not obeyed the gospel, the coming of Jesus is something that you should fear and something for which you most certainly should prepare. We understand that a college student can have some fun, but the main thing he must do is get ready for those final exams. And the main thing we need to do, the most important thing that you and I can do, is to be sure we're ready for that final exam. When's it going to be? I don't know. It's like it was in the classroom when the teacher would just come in and say, take out some paper and a pencil. I said, oh no, I'm not ready. That wasn't usually the final test. I could sometime make it up later. But when the Lord comes now and says, take out a piece of paper, that's it. That's it. Eternity is at stake. And when the Lord comes again, what are you going to say? When he asks, if you obeyed the gospel, what are you going to say if he asks, did you spread the gospel? Let's make certain we're ready by coming to the Lord now, either personally, in our heart, or in reality, in person, if you need to be obedient to the gospel, believing in Jesus, repenting of your sins, to be baptized into Christ. We're going to stand and sing this song to encourage you.